Duncan Guthrie, Rio 6.
Actually, we made an effort to go into Burma, which didn't come off. It was too cloudy, and we sailed around looking for holes in the clouds and so on, and then eventually came back, which I found rather discouraging because I don't like this jumping. And I think I just like even more preparing or waiting to jump, which I never made me feel very happy. Anyhow, a couple of days later, we went in and the clouds had gone. I think at this point it's worth saying something about the difference between the SOE operation, the JEDBRA operation in France, and the Special Forces operation in Burma. In France, we were in groups of three. As I think I said, a British officer or an American officer and an officer from the country into which we were jumping, a Frenchman and Dutchman or whatever it was, and a wireless operator who was a non-commissioned officer who could be from any of those relevant countries. Now, those he could be English, American, or French, or whatever country it was. And we went to help and build up the morale of the resistance. In Burma, we went in with our own troops, native levies, Shan, Karene, or whatever they may be, trained in India, not by us, unfortunately, but already trained, and we went in, a few officers and a wireless operator, with our own troops, and proceeded through the jungle, shooting up the lines of communication or whatever it was that we felt we could do. There was nobody to meet us, except in some places the natives, as fortunately for me, the natives were very friendly, but they were untrained and they weren't in any kind of military or even quasi-military formation. They were just nice villagers. So it was a different operation. Well, on the second attempt into Burma, we, as I say, the clouds had cleared, and we jumped at a certain paddy field which had been picked out on the map or from photographs, and it was the custom, I should say, for us to jump with a British officer first in the stick and a British officer last, just to keep the thing tidy and organized and give the encouragement that was necessary. And on this occasion, I was the last. And off they went, British officer, and then Shan, or whatever they were. And then it came to the one in front of me, who was not too young. And instead of going out, he sat down. He was very temporarily frightened, and I don't blame him. You lived in a little village all your life, suddenly be told to jump out of an aeroplane. It's bad enough for us who perhaps have thought about it a bit more. Anyhow, he sat down, so I had to push him out. Now, the only point I'm saying is this is that it explains why we were a little late over the DZ. And when I jumped after him, I saw I was coming down into trees. And I remember somebody saying to me once, if you go into trees, find you're falling into trees, you'd be very wise to cross your legs, for obvious reasons. And I thought, yes, I'd cross my legs, certainly. And I sailed down, but they weren't trees. In the moonlight, they looked like trees. They had little shrubs about 2'6" high, sort of thing. And, of course, I landed on the ground with my legs crossed, and my ankle went just like that. and I was in incredible pain. And I lay there for a bit, and I heard people vaguely shouting for me and the noises that one gets. And one wondered whether the Japs, who must have heard or seen the parachute operation, were on their way. And I lay there, and then somebody turned up, and I gave a shout, and they called me out, and I said, "Look, I've broken my leg. Can you carry me out?" And we all had a little vial of morphine, and I found mine and stuck it in my arm, which helped a little bit, because the pain was considerable, as you can imagine. They made some sort of a stretcher and carried me out of the paddy field into the jungle, where I was undercover, so to speak. It was all rather jolly with the morphine by that time, and I felt, you know, not too happy, and I hoped that they'd be able to carry me all the way up. We were going way up country as soon as we landed, and I thought, you know, well, they were able to carry me. I'm pretty heavy, and so all the problems. And then as the morphine wore off, and I became a little more rational, I said to myself and to the others, "You can't carry me. You've got to hide me somewhere. I know you can't carry me. It's quite impossible to lumber yourself with carrying a man flat on his back when the Japs will be up in no time looking for us. You must hide me somewhere and hope for the best." There was a British sergeant called Jack Moore, who had tried on landing, he had tried to burn his, I don't know, his codes or something, using I don't know what. Anyhow, he burnt himself quite badly, his hand was badly burnt. And there was another Shan who had sprained his ankle, and he didn't think he'd done more than that, but he couldn't walk. There were the three of us, and I landed in this part of Kareni, which is in the north of, towards the north of Burma, near the Salween River, which is the frontier with Thailand, and where the Karens are largely Christian. This is because, I think, and I maintain, because there was nothing to get out of these Karens. There were no, these Burmese, the Kareni, one of the tribes of Burma, Karens. There was no mining, and there was no cattle or anything that they really could get from them. And the missionaries went in there, and all they wanted was to Christianize them, and there was no big business behind it or anything, and a lot of them became Christians, they rather liked the English, and I can't pretend that the Burmese on the whole liked the British, but the Karens did, and I was very fortunate that I landed in this part of Burma where the Karens came, and the headman, Sopo Do, who had one arm, I don't know why, I never asked him, but he was the headman of the village, and he said, "We will look after them for you." And for the next 3 months they fed me almost daily. Sometimes life got a bit tricky and the Japs were said to be around, and Jack Moore and I talked with each other in whispers for 3 months, because we didn't know how far away the Japs might be at that moment. And a voice rings out through the jungle in a way that is quite surprising. And an alien noise in the jungle can be heard a long way. So we talked in whispers, lying there. Well, Jack could walk around a bit. And, of course, the Lu Dan, the levy, who was sprained his ankle, we couldn't talk to him, you know. We smiled at him occasionally and made sure he had his food and tried to be friendly. But when you don't have one word in common, it's not easy. But he seemed to survive and accepted us. And as I say, almost every day somebody came with some food for us, usually in a bamboo. A slice of bamboo makes a very good cup, mug sort of thing, you see, and a sort of stew thing can be put into this bamboo and so on. We were there for 3 months. Moved occasionally because they thought the Japs were onto us, and they came and they moved us further into the jungle. And then one day, they sent Sorpo-do sent two kids, 10-year-old kids, and for some reason they took fright when they saw us. They thought we were Japs or something. I don't know what. They didn't expect to see us looking like what we did look like. I suppose we'd grown beards or something, which, well, we had grown beards. Anyhow, they gave a shriek and dropped the food and ran back into the jungle again, back to the village. And next day, Sorpo-do came and said, I'm sorry about yesterday. We weren't sorry because we knew that it was just a mistake of the kids. Or we hoped it was, and that we weren't being deserted. And they looked after us, as I say, all the time. Otherwise, I wouldn't be talking to you today.
It seems that you dropped in on the 4th of March, 1945. So if you were there 3 months, it must have been from March to June, I guess.
22nd of May. We came out.
Yes, in the notes you've given me, you've put...
Well, yes.
4th of March. Oh, yes, you put the 4th of March you went in and the 22nd of May you came out.
Yes.
How was it that you came out?
Do you mean literally how was it?
Yes.
On an elephant, which is a nice way to come out. This was... By this time, the Japs were on the run, and we could come out of the jungle and sit on the edge of the paddy field with our machine guns, our Bren guns or whatever it was, our carbines, I think, and look for them to go by. I'm afraid they didn't go by. Well, no, I'm not afraid. They didn't go by within sight. Anyhow, they were on the run. And then, of course, by which time messages had got back that Duncan Guthrie was all right, back to Calcutta. And then we heard that the Lysander was coming in to wherever it was they could fly to by then, and that would take me out.
Your ankle had healed up by then?
No. Healed up. My ankle at that time was almost at a 90 degrees to my leg, sticking out sideways. And I didn't worry about this except for the inconvenience of it, because I said to myself, oh, never mind, as soon as I get to Calcutta, they'll break it down and set it straight. So it was really out like that. And of course, I was wrong. You can't do that. If it set itself in this position, you can't just set it straight and it's going to be all right, which I didn't realize. And they flew me back to England. Tried to do something with it. It was my ankle and it was broken in several places. So, two places or something. And... eventually, first of all, they gave me a brace to wear, which really didn't help at all and was just rather painful. And I wore this for about a year or so here in UK. And then I went to them and said, you know, this doesn't really help. And they said, no, we'll do an arthrodesis. And if you don't know, that means that they take the bones, the joint, and they break it down and set it solid, let it set solid, so that you've got no movement, but hopefully you have no pain either. And they did this, and that was fine for, 40 years or something, however long ago that was. And I walked on it, and then it gradually deteriorated and so on. And recently it's got quite bad. But I just don't walk much. That's no great calamity.
So whilst you were in Burma, you didn't actually open fire on the Japanese?
No.
Because they didn't come close enough?
Mm. And then they sent an elephant in, and as I say, that was really lovely. To, after all this, you know, a bit of a hassle and worry and so on, and then to be helped up onto this majestic animal, who then proceeded to walk at his pace, slowly along the path, and pulling his trunk at the leaves of practically, at the tree leaves he went by, and tearing them off and putting them in his mouth, and plodding slowly on, you know. I can quite see why Maharajas and things and people like that sat on elephants, so that they sat there with gold and silver and velvet. Just sitting there in battle dress is really rather impressive.
Did your party in Burma have a name?
My
party?
No, don't think so.
You didn't have any kind of cover names?
Yes, we did, because something was called Mongoose. But I can't remember what ours was and who was called Mongoose. I can't remember. I don't remember that, no. Sorry. Otter. Somebody was called Otter and somebody was called Mongoose. Some group, you know, and I forget which I was. But as I really never identified myself with anybody because I never got anywhere. And they went tearing up to places like Taungu and blowing up the railway and so on. And I was just sitting there.
Where did you fly from when you went into Burma?
I think Dum Dum.
Calcutta.
Yes, that's where we came out to anyhow.
And you told me off the record earlier that you couldn't remember the name of the place that you flew from to go to France.
No, I never knew it. I mean, we got on this lorry and we were dumped up taken up to a field.
Somewhere up the Great North Road.
Somewhere up the Great North Road, yes.
I think we should just finish by saying that in our museum library you've deposited a copy of your book, which is called Jungle Diary, and which was published by Macmillan in 1946, and is about your experiences in...
That's right. It is a diary I actually wrote when I was there on little scraps of exercise book, which I did just to keep myself out of mischief, so to speak. The other thing that Jack and I did, probably you don't remember this, but there was a game which, when I was young, a board game called L'Attaque. Judging by your face, you never heard of it.
No,
well, it was a game that you had men which stood up on little cardboard men. It was originally a French game, obviously, L'Attaque. And there were generals and sergeants and colonels and various people and a spy and a flag. And you were on squares and you know, a general took if a private challenged a general, then the general won. If the general challenged a mine, then the mine won. And you eventually had to capture the flag.
Sounds like chess. In a way.
Well, it was like sort of childish chess. But you didn't know who you were attacking, you see, because they were on cardboard facing away, facing to the owner, you see. And this was just a blank on this side. Until it was a mine, and then you knew for all time that that was a mine. and you couldn't move a mine. I think I forget the rules. I cut up an old box of ration box or something and made my version of this. And really, we had quite a lot of fun playing l'attaque, as I remembered it, which is probably a long way from the real game, sitting there in the Burma jungle after I was feeling a little rested.